TwarpCast episode 66, Holmescast 2012. It's really quite elementary to deduce. The listener has the good taste to tune in for a forensic analysis of all things Sherlock Holmes, updated for 2012. I would like to introduce you to Jim Caswell, TwarpCast executive producer and man most likely to be defeated by Sherlock Hemlock.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, who I would normally quip was the Watson to my Holmes, but I don't want you to get the wrong idea about our relationship. We're just friends.
Yes, I much prefer Irene Adler, or at least Mrs. Hudson.
Wow, chicken, wow, wow.
As frequent listeners will remember, we last touched upon the subject of Sherlock Holmes in 2009 with Holmescast.
Now, in the spirit of such classic TwarpCast shows as Bionicast, KitCast, VCast, and Angel's Cast, we're going to feature a show with history behind it. And, if it holds to the trend, it won't make it a full season of episodes.
This show is what we finally call The Kiss of Death.
Dun dun dun. And this year is going to be very weird because we're going to give The Kiss of Death...
Dun dun dun.
Twice.
Dun dun.
So, Doug, tell us some of the things that have changed since our last Holmes cast.
Well, to name the biggies, we have a sequel to Robert Downey's Sherlock Holmes, as in Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows. The BBC is bringing to us a modern rendition of Sherlock Holmes as Sherlock, series 1 and 2, with 3 being produced. And CBS decided to rip them off and create a new show called Elementary, starring Johnny Lee Miller as Sherlock Holmes and Lucy Liu as Jane Watson.
We'll touch on Elementary in a couple of moments. First, let's talk about some of those other shows that you mentioned.
Can I touch upon Lucy Liu?
Later. Much, much later, when she's asleep, I'm sure. Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, starred Robert Downey Jr. as Holmes. Jude Law returned as Watson. And this time they were joined by Noomi Rapace as Simza and Jared Harris as Professor Moriarty.
I've been enjoying Jared Harris and his guest appearances on the J.J. Abrams show Fringe.
Yeah, Jared Harris is a pretty good actor. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that I've seen him in that I absolutely despised. But how did he do as Professor Moriarty?
Well, Guy Ritchie has created this little Sherlock Holmes universe for himself. It has a Victorian flavor that has been sprinkled with modern anachronisms. And in this little universe, I think that Robert Downey Jr. as Sherlock Holmes and Jared Harris as Moriarty are very good foils.
Yeah, as we stated back in Holmescast, it definitely has a bit of a steampunk feel to it. With this movie, he was doing camo clothing and various little devices that related to modern-day devices, only with that steampunk feel to it.
Now, the camo clothing made me laugh, but I don't think as Guy Ritchie's intention was, because my laughter came from the modern Pink Panther, who had this exact same gag.
Only it was played for laughs. While this one, the first time it was played for gags, the second time, not so much. I enjoyed the movie. I didn't enjoy it as much as the first one. This one actually felt a little bit over the top for me. The introduction of Simza into the story didn't feel like it flowed nearly as well as Irene Adler. I didn't feel like she contributed very much to the story. She just kind of came across as the female lead.
Interestingly enough, I think the female lead character was kind of messed up in this movie. There is a departure for Irene Adler and an introduction for Simza that, whereas I enjoyed the Simza character, I didn't actually see a reason not to continue with the Irene Adler character. Outside of Simza's gypsy heritage, they were essentially the same character.
I agree. I think the reason that they wrote off the Irene Adler character probably had one of two reasons behind it. Either the actress wanted too much money or had another project that she was supposed to be doing, or they didn't want the character of Irene Adler to be getting between Holmes and Watson.
They really didn't need to, because Watson's wife does that quite effectively.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, Watson's wife is a better character and plays a more pivotal role in the story than Simza does.
And as far as your description of it being over the top, it really was the movie maker's intention to make this go to 11. If you call Sherlock Holmes a 10, they had to push it up. They had to change the fight scenes to show such things as it's possible to throw even Sherlock Holmes for a loop and that he can recover from it. You could tell they didn't want to remake the same movie they had already done.
I think they could have done that, but cut some of it out of the middle. Because about the time that we hit the middle of the movie, I really felt like this was going a little too long. I was ready for the pace to pick back up again to get moving to the climax of the story. Usually, you're the one who's all about the explosions and the gunfights and the car chases, and I'm the one that's all about the story, and in this case, I felt like the story was holding things back some.
Well, I'm glad to hear you admit that finally, Jim. Maybe there's hope for you yet.
Well, I like it when there's good story to carry the movie along.
Something that this movie added that impressed me was the inclusion of Mycroft Holmes, played by Stephen Fry, who is an actor that is just brilliant and I've loved him for many years.
Yes, he was very good. And as opposed to the times that they've tried to show Mycroft as being even more Sherlock-y than Sherlock, they were able to play it for fun in this one, and I appreciated that. There is a third Sherlock Holmes film currently in pre-production. It's in the writing stage.
I believe it's called Sherlock Holmes and the Case of Very, Very Much Money.
Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Greedy Executives.
Which isn't to say I won't go see it. I enjoy Robert Downey Jr. as Sherlock Holmes. It's quite fun.
That brings us to Sherlock. As Doug mentioned before, Sherlock has had both a first and second series, which to us Americans, that's a season. And not really a season because it's three episodes. But when an episode runs for an hour and 45 minutes, it's worthwhile. Essentially, what Stephen Moffat does is he puts together three movies, runs them over 3 weeks, and call it a TV series. We call it a mini-series, but that's neither here nor there. It doesn't diminish from the quality of the show.
No. Honestly, if you want to talk quality, there is the definitive Sherlock Holmes that was made by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and I would say second to none after that is Sherlock, as created by Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss.
Sherlock is a modern interpretation of the Sherlock Holmes novels, starring Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock, Martin Freeman as Watson, Rupert Graves as D.I. Greg Lestrade, Andrew Scott as Jim Moriarty, Mark Gatiss as Mycroft Holmes, and in Series 2, Laura Pulver as Irene Adler.
This is such a brilliant cast. Right now, in England, they consider Benedict Cumberbatch one of the most influential performers in their country. And I completely understand. As far as genre goes, for us Americans, he will be in the next couple of years in the Star Trek II movie as the new villain. Presumably, Khan Noonien Singh, that's a rumor. But he's also going to be in the three Hobbit movies, playing multiple parts, including Smaug the Dragon. And his co-star, Martin Freeman, is going to be Bilbo Baggins.
We were talking a few minutes ago about Mycroft Holmes, and Mark Gatiss as Mycroft in this series, again, phenomenal. For a character who is almost a throwaway character in the novels, these people have done a wonderful job of, I can't say capturing a character, I'm going to say creating a character, and making them entertaining.
The only thing that I actually don't like about Mark Gatiss's Mycroft is I am not entirely thrilled with Mark Gatiss. I mean, he's done a brilliant performance. I can't complain about that. But as a writer, there's just something about his writing that's off to me. The one episode of The Six that I actually didn't like was written by him. And when he writes for Doctor Who, I usually don't like those episodes either.
Speaking of Doctor Who, Stephen Moffat is also the current showrunner of that series as well.
So, no coincidence, if you like one, you'll like the other.
This year really introduced two new characters to the series, Jim Moriarty and Irene Adler. Now, I'm going to get this out of the way for you, Doug. Laura Pulver is absolutely gorgeous, and her nude scene for showing absolutely nothing was phenomenal.
A credit to her and the show that they showed nothing. They left it all to the imagination, and yet somehow they left nothing to the imagination.
Yes, Irene Adler, knowing Sherlock Holmes's talent for picking up on the nuances about a person's clothes, their makeup, their surroundings, all this other stuff, meets him for the first time buck naked.
I'm just sure that she was looking forward to having an oral argument with a good Sherlock.
I'm sure she wouldn't have minded any type of intercourse with Sherlock Holmes. Andrew Scott as Jim Moriarty. I'm actually interested in your interpretation of this interpretation of Moriarty.
It was really quite different. I guess the way I picture it in my head is it was kind of the genius of Sherlock Holmes meets the craziness of the Joker.
Okay, I think I had a slightly different interpretation of the character than you did, because a lot of times in my mind, when I think of Jim Moriarty, I think of someone who is Sherlock Holmes's mental equal.
I would agree with that completely.
And this interpretation of Moriarty, as opposed to being a intellectual scalpel, seemed more like a brainy 2x4. I didn't feel like he so much outsmarted Sherlock Holmes as much as just put Sherlock Holmes in no-win situations.
I would argue that actually means he outsmarted Sherlock Holmes at every turn. The only time that we really saw Sherlock Holmes outsmarting Jim Moriarty was actually in the cliffhanger from season 2 when he decides, I'm not going to let you win, I'll commit suicide rather than letting you win.
I don't know, as much as I felt like A Game of Shadows was over the top, I did actually like Jared Harris's interpretation of Moriarty more, because it felt a little bit more subdued. He was outthinking Sherlock Holmes at every turn, but he didn't feel the need to be grandiose about it. He just sort of did it, and sat back and went, okay, now what are you going to do?
See, I took it completely different, especially when you see the ending of A Game of Shadows. I think that Sherlock Holmes outsmarted Moriarty at every turn by letting Moriarty think he was winning. Every time that Moriarty won, he was digging his grave a little deeper. However, the Sherlock interpretation with Andrew Scott as Jim Moriarty, I think he was really beating it. Sherlock would think that he had a break in the case, and then it would turn out that, nope, already planned for this eventuality. If you want to use the over-the-top, almost to the point of Deus Ex Machina, that Jim Moriarty just, as you said, couldn't lose.
Actually, that right there. I think you just hit upon my biggest problem with the Sherlock Jim Moriarty. The fact that at every turn he had something in place, to the point where it just stopped being believable after a while.
That I would give you as a legitimate complaint that I agree with, as opposed to a legitimate complaint which I don't agree with. If I'm interpreting what you're saying, is that kind of threw you out of the story, that you lost your willing suspension of disbelief?
Yes, very much so.
Whereas I kind of saw it as good fun, I was just like, okay, what's going to happen next?
Yeah, it threw me out, especially in the last of the three of series 2. About halfway through the episode, I'm sitting there going, God, this is just getting unbelievable. And like you said, it threw me out, and all the way up to the end, I was just kind of sitting there going, okay, yeah, I know how this is going to end. I don't quite know exactly the details, but I know where this is going. Let's just get there. And overall, I would have to say that I definitely liked Series 1 overall better than Series 2. The three stories in the first series I thought were much better told. And the three shows in Series 2, I just kind of felt like, okay, it's good, it's not great.
I guess I would agree with the assessment that Series 1 was the better of the two. It's so much as I think it was a constantly good show. So we're going to give it pens in the pocket protector, 3 or 4 pens in the pocket protector for every episode. Whereas season 2, I loved the Irene Adler episode. Nudity or not, I think that was an excellent episode.
That was the best told episode of the three of series 2.
I think it was the best told story of all of them.
And that was one of those stories that I was sitting there going, okay, she's outthinking him. But it wasn't so extreme that it threw me out. I just was able to go with it and go, she's a very intelligent woman competing with a very intelligent man, and it's very understandable why this version of Sherlock Holmes would find himself attracted to this version of Irene Adler. She's a beautiful woman, but more important to Sherlock Holmes, she's incredibly smart.
And although this series also gave her an exit, I much prefer the television series exit to the movie exit.
Yes. It very much keeps you guessing all the way up to the end.
Series 2, The Hounds of the Baskervilles, though, I could have done without. Really, the only redeeming thing in it is it was so well acted that it was just like, will I ever watch this again? I don't know. But it was really well acted. Oh, and there was the glow-in-the-dark bunny. That was really funny.
For being one of Sherlock Holmes's most famous stories, I was let down. I felt like they went too modern day. Taking it into the realm of science fiction, which you know I have no problem with science fiction, but Sherlock Holmes science fiction, the two just didn't mesh up well in this case.
I don't know what to say, because I can't disagree with what you said. It was obviously my least favorite episode. Did have a clever bit of casting, though. The gentleman from Being Human, who was a werewolf, in The Hounds of the Baskervilles believes he's being hunted by hounds. I thought that was clever.
One of the other things that I really like about the Sherlock series in the UK is the fact that they downplay the negative habits that have been attributed to Sherlock Holmes over the years, and they play up the intelligence and the quirkiness. Does he have an addiction that he fights? Yes. He's addicted to cigarettes. They play him off as being almost asexual, as opposed to homosexual or any other type of sexual. He's strange and he's quirky without those quirks becoming who he is.
That's kind of interesting because I think a lot of his personality is the quirks. And as brilliant as he is, one of the things that he can't figure out is human emotion. There's a lab technician that he's used throughout the whole show that obviously has a crush on her, and he cannot be meaner to her.
And the thing is that he isn't going out of his way to be mean. He's treating her like he treats everybody else. He's just rude and obnoxious to everybody.
Yes, and he doesn't understand why this offends people. Another thing you alluded to is sexuality. There's a running gag through the whole first season where people keep mistaking Sherlock and Watson as a couple. And it's funny to watch because it makes Watson incredibly uncomfortable. But Sherlock is just like, why do people keep assuming this? It boggles his mind, like, why any two people would get together, much less two men.
Actually, I think it even goes one step beyond that. I think it boggles his mind that any two people would get together to do that. The idea of two people being together as friends, co-workers, associates, that he doesn't really question so much. It's, why would anybody want to have sex, especially with someone of their own gender? It baffles his mind.
I don't even know that he really has friends. I think Sherlock Holmes' only friend is Watson. Everybody else is somebody that should be subservient to Sherlock Holmes. If he needs a policeman, he needs Inspector Lestrade. If he needs his home cleans, he needs Mrs. Hudson. I mean, everybody is doing something for Sherlock.
And to a certain degree, Watson fills a role in his life as well. He just kind of accepts the fact that the role that Watson plays is more important than the role anybody else plays in his life.
I would agree with that, because that's how he sees friendship, as, okay, this is somebody who's going to do something for me, but because we have an important relationship, I will return the favor.
And the only person who comes anywhere close to that is Irene Adler.
Yes. Again, because of his character and how he's defined, they really show him as not understanding human connection. There seems to be a vagueness in Sherlock's actual attitude, enough that he could be attracted to her, or enough to think that maybe not.
Whether he's attracted to her or not, though, he respects her.
Absolutely. And I think that's a key to the Sherlock Holmes character. Probably permeates much of the fiction, that what Sherlock Holmes respects is intellect.
Yes. So, obviously, Doug and I are big fans of Series 1 and Series 2. We're looking forward to Series 3. I'm hoping that it goes back to the quality of Series 1, and maybe not so much as the quality of Series 2. But Series 3 will be released in 2013.
Ah, speaking of quality Sherlock Holmes, CBS wants to put their foot in the little puddle here in a show called Elementary.
Yeah. Okay, let me first start out by saying that CBS originally wanted to remake BBC's Sherlock. They wanted to take their scripts, film them here in the United States, and put them out on their network. But
BBC, in its infinite wisdom, said, no, not a chance, not on this earth, not in this lifetime.
Drop dead. But Sherlock Holmes is in the public domain. CBS didn't have to get permission from BBC to make a Sherlock Holmes TV series. They just needed BBC's permission to crib their notes. So instead, CBS has pushed ahead by doing a remake set in modern day of their very own. As Doug stated earlier, it stars Johnny Lee Miller as Sherlock Holmes.
And kind of the irony here is Johnny Lee Miller and Benedict Cumberbatch are actually very good friends in the real life.
Well, at least they were. They are bringing in Lucy Liu to play Dr. Watson, a female Watson. And this is not the first time that I've ever heard of using a female Dr. Watson. In fact, it enables them to do things like having a romantic connection between Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Without there being a homoerotic nature to the relationship.
Exactly.
Because, of course, that would offend Americans.
It is also going to star Aidan Quinn as Captain Tobias Gregson, which why they couldn't use Lestrade is beyond me, but the fact that they're using Greg's son when Lestrade's first name is Greg is not lost.
You know, as far as this cast goes, I really like Johnny Lee Miller. He first came to my attention with a little show called Eli Stone, where his character had an aneurysm and was receiving messages from God. And it was just incredibly well done. Just a marvelous show.
One of those shows that flew under the radar for pretty much everybody and lasted for, what, one season?
For two seasons. Most recently for me, he was in Dark Shadows, the Tim Burton movie. You know, that movie was what it was. It wasn't terrific and it wasn't terrible.
It was a remake of Dark Shadows. I don't know what people expected, but having known what Dark Shadows was, it was pretty dead on for me.
I enjoyed it. Lucy Liu as Joan Watson. I'm not willing to say, oh, it's a woman, I won't watch it. But Lucy Liu has had a wonderfully brilliant career. Pretty much I've never seen her in anything that I've hated. Now, I haven't watched everything she's been in, but I've liked what I've seen. So I loved her in the Charlie's Angels movies. She was a great comic timing, great actress. I'll give her a shot.
The only problem that I have with Lucy Liu playing Dr. Joan Watson is that I didn't realize that her career had sunk that low.
I would agree with that. I consider Lucy Liu an A-list movie actress, not a B-list television star.
Yeah. Not that there aren't great TV actors. It's just, it's often looked at as a step down when an actor takes a role on TV. I remember when Gary Sinise accepted the lead in CSI New York, there were a lot of people who were kind of looking at it and going, ooh, that's going to be bad for his career. Honestly, I think he's been great as Mac. But it means that he hasn't been able to do movies. And movies are typically seen as the big dollar signs.
When people are looking at careers, and whether this is true or not, when they look at careers, they look at television as a stepping stone, as a way of saying, okay, I did it, now I can move on to movies. Something like George Clooney, who started out in an incredibly awful role at the end of The Facts of Life, moved on to pop stardom through ER, and now he's a giant movie star.
I think it's a very fair assumption to say if George Clooney ever does TV again, people are going to be looking at it as the downfall of his career. Now, some other changes that are taking place with the CBS version. They are transplanting homes from England to New York City, which, again, it's not the first time that I've seen the concept of transplanting Sherlock Holmes to New York City, specifically. In this case, I don't think it's a case of enabling them to tell a fish-out-of-water story. I think it is them succumbing to the stereotype that Americans can't identify with places that aren't in America.
There really is a stereotype. One of the authors that I just love is a Canadian author. And specifically, one of the things that he does is set his stories in Canada. And he was told he would never sell a book like that because Americans will only read about America. He's one of the top science fiction writers out there. He's one of the few people who's won the Hugo, the Nebula, the Saturn Awards. I mean, he's a brilliant author. But there is this stereotype that comes with promoting entertainment for Americans, that they need to see it in America. I heard an English actor the other day doing a part as a villain, and one of his comments that I never really thought about before, he says, I'm an English actor. Of course I'm playing the villain. And I was like, oh, the reason I don't see that is because I watch a lot of international television. So when I watch British television, these people with English accents are the heroes of the show. It's only when I'm watching American television, which I hate to do, that these people with British accents end up becoming the bad guys.
And the thing is that if this stereotype is based on any actual beliefs or data, it is so out of date at this stage that it's a complete fallacy. I mean, if you have any questions as to whether or not something can be successful and be British, look at the Harry Potter series. Look at the James Bond franchise. Look at Doctor Who. It is a fallacy, but it's a fallacy that executives can't look beyond. It's like the Nielsen rating system. It is so out of date, it is laughable.
You get better ratings from YouTube, actually.
As I said earlier with Sherlock, the BBC show really seems to downplay the negative habits and things like that. I haven't seen the pilot yet, but just by the character descriptions and pilot descriptions that I've read so far, it seems as though all the things that the BBC show ignores or tries to downplay, Elementary wants to wallow in. Sherlock Holmes is an ex-heroin addict. one of the reasons that his father has hired Dr. Watson is to make sure that he keeps off the smack.
I would agree that based on what CBS is kind of releasing to the public, character descriptions, the trailer and whatnot, do seem to be capitalizing on these negative sides of Sherlock Holmes. But the only thing that I can say to kind of rebut that is my family went to San Diego Comic-Con this year, and they got to see the pilot episode at the con. And each member of my family actually agreed this was a thumbs-up show they were going to watch.
And I guess that kind of brings us to the quote-unquote kiss of death aspect of these Torpcasts. This is a show that I am going to watch. It's a show that I hope that I'm going to enjoy. While there are a lot of negatives that are pointing at the idea that there's a good chance I'm not going to enjoy it, I want to enjoy it. I hope that it's good. I'm also willing to acknowledge the fact that there's a better than 50-50 chance that this is not going to go well.
Well, if you want to do the whole kiss of death thing, I hope it's Elementary that gets canceled and not Sherlock. Knock on wood.
Yeah, Sherlock has proven itself to be a good show. I remember reading an interview with Stephen Moffat where his big concern is that if Elementary bombs really, really badly, that it could have an effect on his show.
I think that's the same problem that Benedict Cumberbatch has with it also. He's worried that if it's a shitstorm, that some of the shit's going to pile on him.
But in addition to the concerns, America has a horrible track record with taking BBC shows and doing their own spins on them. Yes, there have been a few successes. The Office was more successful in America than it ever was in Britain.
But a show like Coupling, even the network has said, we don't know what we were thinking.
For every Office that you have 10 Life on Marses.
Which also has a Doctor Who connection, because it was originally in England, which starred John Sims, who played the Master.
Okay, so that takes care of Elementary. We hope it'll succeed. We have questions whether it'll succeed, and by doing a Kiss of Death episode, we're kind of almost guaranteeing that it won't succeed.
That kind of hedges our bets.
But this is not going to be the only Kiss of Death episode that we do this year. We're doubling down, and we're going to do a Beast Cast in a couple of weeks, focusing in on the CW's new Beauty and the Beast TV series. So please, make sure that you join us in the second week of October when we talk about Beast Cast.
As always, we thank you for listening. We appreciate your feedback. Please write jim@torponline.net. We can also be found on Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
This has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2012.
Dun dun dun!